Koti Vaishnavinda Kijaya, Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Kijaya, Premshi Koshi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha, Sri Vas Adi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Kijaya, Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gogopinath Shamakund Radhakund Giri Govardhan Kijaya, Sri Vrindavan Dham Kijaya, Sri Navadvip Dham Kijaya, Sri Jagannath Puri Dham Kijaya, Bhakti Devi Kijaya, Tulsi Devi Kijaya, Jamuna Devi Kijaya, Ganga Devi Kijaya, Samaveda Bhaktivinoda Kijaya. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, Verse 23. Yatha Rishikesha Kalena Devaki.
Yatha Rishikesha Kalena Devaki.
Kamsena Rudachi Rudati Chiram Sucharpita.
Kamsena Rudachi.
Mochita hamcha sahatma javibhu.
Mochita hamcha sahatma javibhu.
Twayeva natena muhu vipatkana.
Twayeva natena muhu vipatkana.
Yata.
Yata.
As it were.
As it were.
Rishikesh.
Rishikesh.
The master of the senses.
The master of the senses.
Kalena,
Kalena,
by the envious.
Devaki,
Devaki, the mother of Sri Krishna.
Kamsena,
by King Kamsa.
Rudha,
imprisoned. Atichiram,
for a long time.
Suchapita,
distress.
Vimochita,
released.
Ahamcha,
also myself.
Saha Atmaja,
along with my children.
Vipo,
O great one.
Twaya Eva,
by your lordship.
Natena,
as the protector.
Muhu,
constantly.
Vipat Ganat,
from a series of dangers.
O Rishikesh,
master of the senses and lord of lords,
you have released your mother Devaki,
who was long imprisoned and distressed.
By the envious King Kamsa,
and me,
and my children,
from a series of constant dangers.
Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Devaki, the mother of Krishna and the sister of King Kamsa, was put into prison along with her husband Vasudeva because the envious king was afraid of being killed by Devaki's eighth child, Krishna. He killed all the sons of Devaki who were born before Krishna, but Krishna escaped the danger of child slaughter by being transferred to the house of Maharaj Nanda, Lord Krishna's foster father. Kunti Devi, along with her children, were also saved from a series of dangers. But Kunti Devi was shown far more favor because Lord Krishna did not save the other children of Devaki, whereas he saved the children of Kunti Devi. This was done because Devaki's husband Vasudeva was living, whereas Kunti Devi was a widow. And there was none to help her except Krishna. The conclusion is that sometime that Krishna endows more favor on a devotee who is in greater dangers. Sometimes he puts his pure devotees in such dangers because in that condition of helplessness, the devotee becomes more attached to the Lord. And the more the attachment is there for the Lord, the more success is there for the devotee. I'll read the next verse as well, which has not such a long purport because they're linked together. Kunti says, "My dear Krishna, your lordship has protected us from a poisoned cake, from a great fire, from cannibals, from the vicious assembly, and from all the sufferings due to our exile in the forest, as well as from the battle where great generals fought. And now you have saved us from the weapon of Ashvatthama." So the Prabhupada says, the list of dangers encountered is submitted herein. And of course there were more dangers. This is just a brief list. Devaki was once put into difficulty by her envious brother. Otherwise she was well. But Kunti Devi and her sons were put into one difficulty after another for years and years together. They were put into trouble by Duryodhana and his party due to the kingdom, and each and every time the sons of Kunti were saved by the Lord. Once Bhima was administered poison in a cake, and once they were put into the house made of shellac, which was set afire. And once Draupadi was dragged out and attempts were made to insult her by stripping her naked in the vicious assembly of the Kurus. The Lord supplied Draupadi by supplying an immeasurable length of cloth, and Duryodhana's party failed to see her naked. Similarly, when they were exiled in the forest, Bhima had to fight with a man-eating demon, Hidimba, but the Lord saved him. So it was not finished there. After all these tribulations, there was the battle of Kurukshetra, and Arjuna had to meet such great, powerful persons as Drona and Bhishma and Karna, all very powerful fighters. And at last, even when everything was done away with, there was the Brahmastra released by the son of Dronacharya to kill the child within the womb of Uttara. And so the Lord saved the only surviving descendant of the Kurus, Maharaj Purikit. Now, do any of us think that we have that many problems in our lives? Does any of us think it's that difficult for us? We have problems in our life. We feel like this, we feel like that. We struggle with our own personal difficulties. Srila Prabhupada tells us there are three kinds of difficulties. Those that are created by ourselves, for ourselves. We worry about things that we don't need to worry about. We act in ways that are impatient or foolish, we get ourselves into difficulty. Then there are difficulties caused by others. So we may have that kind of difficulty where we have somebody very cruel beating us every day. Or we have to go to an office and have a boss who puts pressure on us constantly. Or we may have to manage many, many children at home and it may be stressful. But are our difficulties as great as the difficulties here? Now I was thinking it would be very nice if each one of you would think for a moment as I'm speaking to you, quietly think, what is the thing that you faced in your life that's been the most difficult for you? What do you have as a personal difficulty? Because each one of us has our own personal
struggles. And each one of us should try to get in touch with something that we really, really, really have a hard time with. I'll quietly count to 10. I'll give you that 10 seconds to think about how difficult that particular aspect of your life is. Did everyone get a little bit in touch with something that's a real struggle for them? Now I ask you, would you like to have that happen to you again and again and again and again? And everyone here will say, no, I'm working so hard to get rid of that particular difficult situation. Because this is the nature of the material world. This is how it goes on. Just like a walking journey, if I want to go from here to the pujari room, I put one step, the next step, one foot, then the next foot, one foot, then the next foot. And by moving my feet like this, I will eventually get to the pujari room. And it depends how anxious I am to get to the pujari room, how quickly I'll get there. One step left, right, left, right. Well, you'll be interested to note that the material existence that we each have, our embodiment in this world, the two steps that keep it going. One step is, how can I find happiness? And the next step is, how can I get rid of difficulty? What can I do to get rid of my difficulty? And then how can I find a more positive situation for myself? And this is how we prolong our journey round and round and round the wheel of samsara. The wheel of samsara means that by the time you end this life, managing to contain your difficulties as best possible and trying to find the greatest possible degree of happiness in this life, at the end of your life, you'll be given a wonderful opportunity. At the very end of your life, there's a moment that every person has where before them flashes everything. And whatever you want at that moment, that will start the next cycle of the Ferris wheel around. So if at that moment you say, I just never, ever, ever want, then you won't get that again. And if you think, I never had, you're on the journey to get that. You may not deserve what you want, so it may take some time, like it might take me some time to walk to the pujari room, and also I might have a mixture of complicated desires. Like, I never want that, but I wouldn't mind that. Some people think, oh, I don't want to ever be married again, but I'd like children. Or they think, I don't like little children, but I like grown-up children. They have all kinds of mixed sort of a mesh of desires. Whatever their complex mesh of desires are, material nature is very obligingly, kindly, due to that mercy of Krishna, is going to provide a solution for you. But Kunti Devi is different than us. She's thinking, let all those difficult things that I've been through in my life happen again and again and again. If you stop and think about it, this is quite amazing, especially in today's modern age where people's tolerance for difficulty is very, very small and their desire for selfishness is very, very big. And so they want, if there's something wrong, some problem somewhere, they have a low resistance to suffering and a high resistance to enjoyment, and so they want that removed, quickly take that away. But no, she's saying, let that difficulty come, I don't care. And why? We need to know why she says that. Because if we want to ever get out of this samsara, even as devotees, believe me, as devotees, we're also treading on this path. Unless we come to the point where our attachment to Krishna
intensifies to such a degree that we don't care what's happening, because there's only Him. Otherwise we're not advanced devotees. And neophyte devotees should happily look forward to Krishna satisfying all their desires. This is very sobering. This is very sobering. But we are devotees. Yes, we are devotees. We're working. We've given our life on a certain level to Krishna consciousness. But have we developed this attachment for Krishna? The conclusion is that Krishna endows more favor to a devotee who is in the greater dangers. Sometimes He puts His pure devotees in such dangers because in that condition, so this is a devotee. Please, all of you, as we've been saying, have a reality check. This is what a devotee does. I can tell you what I do, but that won't be very valuable for you. But what a devotee does is the more danger, they welcome it because it's going to really intensify their Krishna consciousness, their consciousness on Krishna. Now there's one thing you need to note here, that it's not only in dangers that they're conscious of Krishna. It's not when things are going nicely, they're frivolous, or they're chatty, or they're having a good time, or that life is fine. And that only when they're in danger they call Krishna, Krishna. One time I remember one gentleman, we were in Melbourne at the time, we went to his house, or his son's house, he was visiting from India, and he said, I never go to the temple, quite proudly. He said, I never go to the temple, I never ask God for anything, so I never go to the temple. And we both became a little angry with him. And of course we presented him some philosophical points that going to the temple is not meant for asking God for things. It's meant for giving service. It's meant for giving service. And the first service is we have to hear about Krishna. And we have to become attracted to Him because He's attractive and not because He's going to help me. So Kunti Devi didn't think, oh, here's another danger, oh, this is good, now I'll think of Krishna. She was always thinking of Krishna, but when there was danger, she knew nowhere else to go. So her thoughts of Krishna intensified. We must become like this if we want to become really advanced, serious devotees. We must become like this. And it's possible, because every one of us has a relationship with Krishna. And every one of us has the opportunity to transfer His attention immediately or gradually from life in this world with its woes and problems and pleasures and so forth, its profit and gain and its loss and suffering, our big responsibilities that rest on our shoulders and make us feel that we're so important. All of this, this is all part of what Srila Prabhupada says, it's like a dream. In the story of King Chitraketu, if you know that story from the Bhagavatam, King Chitraketu had a great and deep and burning difficulty. He wanted to have a son. Everyone in this room can understand the importance and value of having a son. And he was a king. So just imagine if you're a king and you amass a whole empire, and then when you die, what's going to happen to it unless you can hand it to a trustworthy, noble son? So this was burning in his mind all the time. He was a good manager, he kept everything in good order, and when the saints and sages came, he offered them all respect. But every one of them, he asked them the same question, can you give me a son? And do you know what? In those days, because this was in a different yuga, he had so many wives. Because kings in those days, they would have even Ambarish Maharaj, when he married and created another queen or a princess, he would send his sword, and the sword would go to the family of that girl. And when she had touched that sword, she was considered to be his wife. And then she would be established in a palace, and sometimes he would visit her, because he had so many. So King Chitraketu had millions. And each one of those queens, he had tried to have a son. Just think how intense his anxiety must have been. We know the anxiety of one family. He was continuously meditating on this. It was burning for him. And so when Angira came to see him, he looked at his face and he could see the color of his face, the cloudiness of his face, and he could understand he's not in good consciousness. So he asked him how the kingdom was going, and all the questions he asked him about his duties and responsibilities and so on, he answered them positively. Everything is going well, this is good, yes, yes. But if you're talking to somebody and they look very sad and you say, how's your mother? They say, she's wonderful. How's your father? He's very good. How are your children? They're all wonderful. You're thinking, what's the problem? Trying to find out, what's the problem? Everything sounds good, but they look miserable. And so then finally he asked him, what is your difficulty? And the king told him. And Angira understood. He has such a big desire, material desire. There's no use in talking to him about transcendental knowledge. There's no use. So he said, would you like me to fulfill your desire? And the king was so happy. And of course he could fulfill the desire. And he did fulfill the desire. And then, as we know from this wonderful pastime, it produced a lot of tension. Because he had been so adamant to get this, had so many queens, when one queen was blessed with a son, all the other queens were like burning. They were so distressed because he lost interest in them. He only married them to get his son. He had his son now. He just lost interest in them. They began to talk to each other because they were so down and unhappy. And they said, you know, we're even worse than if he had maid servants. He even respects the maid servants, but he doesn't even talk to us. And they became so burning with bitterness about the way the king was behaving that they got to the point that they actually killed the child. They poisoned the child. Imagine that. If you came home and you found your child had been poisoned. We hear horrible stories. They love to put them on the front page of the newspaper because people, it's called ghastly rats. People like it. It's a rasa from the spiritual world, converted into a rasa of the material world. So King Chitraketu, when he heard what had happened, he was somewhere else, happily doing his daily duties. When he heard all this crying coming from the inner chambers of his palace, and then someone came, terrified, because it's not a very nice thing to tell a king something has gone wrong, he might cut off your head. So they came and told him. And he went there and he couldn't even stand up. If he's walking from here to the pujari room, it would have taken him a long time. He kept falling over. He was so totally, absolutely heartbroken. And finally he got there and he looked at his child and he saw his eyes were turned up. His pupil was not showing. And he realized it was true. The child was dead. And then he fell on the ground and he was thrashing around on the ground, crying, rolling around. You know, Srila Prabhupada explains, when somebody beats their chest, you know, or they bang their head on the ground, which is sometimes seen in great grief, it's because the pain of the beating of the head is less than the pain that they're feeling inside. So he was like that. He was so distressed in such difficulty. And at that very moment, Angira came. And Angira wasn't feeling sadness like that. But he knew the right time to come. So he came with Narada Muni and they came to the king. And the king, just imagine if we saw somebody like that, we would want to give them a drink of water and try and get them up and pacify them and try to work out their problems and preach to them and counsel them and on and on and on and on. And Angira was not like that because the Vedic culture was not like that. The Vedic culture wasn't about this world, it was about that world. And everybody was given this perspective that this is part of your journey there. So take it and tolerate it and think about Krishna. This was the culture that surrounded everyone. And modern culture is so materialistically indulgent. So naturally it affects us, because all around us are people trying to enjoy materialism, and we're just a small body of people here in one house, and the one there, 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 and all down the street and down that street. They all have their big TV sets and they're all trying to enjoy life. So sometimes we're foolish enough to think that, oh, okay, I guess that's okay for me to do that too. Or let me do it in a little Krishna. Krishna will be there as well. I'll watch a movie of the Mahabharata in between. And thereby we cheat ourselves. And we leave ourselves not going anywhere. So Chitrakeju was crying and crying and crying. And Narada came. Narada is very tricky. So he came along with Angira. And Angira said to Chitrakeju, what is your problem? He didn't even try to pacify him. He said, what's your problem? And the king couldn't speak. He was speechless. And then Angira said, look, your son is here. What is the difficulty? And the king couldn't speak. And he said, look, your same son that you loved and you kissed and you picked him up and you hugged him and you thought of his future, he's still here. Look, he's still here. And the king said, what are you saying? And he said, the same body that you loved, my son, is still here. Look. And then the king was not able to take this kind of instruction initially. And finally, at a certain point, the king said, who are you? Because this sadhu, he was so callous to the king's suffering. And then Angira said, my dear king, when you desired to have a son, I came to you. And he revealed himself. And the king fell down and said, oh, Angira, oh, Maharaj, your gift of a son has given me so much pain. And then Angira told the king, he said, my dear king, you are now experiencing the misery of family life. So please note this, that Krishna and saintly persons say that family life is miserable. And we try in every way possible to make it the greatest joy, the focus of our lives, our everything. And so when a miserable situation occurs, we try like anything to get rid of it. But Krishna himself says, oh, this whole material world is miserable. Family life is miserable. And we think, because we're very modern, we think, oh, this is a negative attitude. We have to be very positive and say, I'm obsessed with family life. I'm so passionate about my family. And we learn all these phrases that we're supposed to say that are supposed to make us sound like we're involved and happy about life in general. But the sadhus are saying, what are you doing? What are you doing? This life in this world is full of miseries. Chant Hare Krishna. Chant seriously. And try and perfect your relationship with Krishna. And we think, oh, well that's very nice, but first let me sort out some of these serious problems. And after I've got my problems under control, then my chanting should automatically come up. But Krishna says, no. No. And Angira told the king, no. Because this world, he said, is like a dream. And so in a dream, those who have dreams at night will have the experience that in dreams you're going down a street or you're going somewhere and all of a sudden you're somewhere else and somehow or other you get to somewhere and then something else happens and the dream at night is disjointed very often. Sometimes we have very profound dreams that have a meaning and a significance that can be read by dream reading experts. But mostly it's the mind wandering from one subject to another on the subconscious plane. And Srila Prabhupada tells us, that's a night dream. And he said, and then when you open your eyes in the morning, you begin your daydream. Throughout the day, you have your daydream. And you go to sleep at night, and the night dream begins. Because it lasts only as long as a dream. So isn't it our real question should be something like, how can I feel like that? How can I experience this? If this is supposed to be possible to experience, how come also I'm not experiencing it? How come? These is an intelligent person who's asking these questions. They're hearing something. They're thinking about their own situation. And they're seeing there's a contradiction between how I see and how the sadhu sees, the devotee, the pure devotee sees. And then, oftentimes, we feel, or I'll say for myself, I feel quite discouraged, actually. I feel a little bit embarrassed and quite frightened because I think, oh my gosh, I never think like that. And I'm not very attracted to Krishna. How am I ever going to get an attraction to Krishna? Maybe I'm new and I don't know how I'm ever going to get to that point. So I feel like, I think maybe I don't know what to do here. And some part of me sometimes says, why don't you turn back? Why don't you just turn back? Go backwards a bit. You'll feel more comfortable. You've gone a little too far forward. Go back a bit. And then I think, my gosh, what am I telling myself? You've just been told, don't drink it, it's poison. And me, myself, is saying, why don't you just have a sip then? Just a little bit, it's not so bad. Me is telling me, not others are telling me, I'm telling myself, my gosh, I'm living within the company of a mind who is not my friend. Who is not my friend. If I can turn my attention from all the personalities out there who I like and dislike and I feel this way towards, and turn towards me, my problem, then, do you know what I feel? And maybe you feel too sometimes. I feel I'm in a dangerous situation. Within my own thinking and my own willpower, I feel quite threatened from within. And then we have to practice. I'm in a dangerous situation. Wonderful. Now's my time to turn to Krishna because I'm in danger. I can't do anything about it. Then I have to recognize Krishna has just given me a moment of intelligence to see my own danger. And now I can turn to him if I want. And sometimes, like a small child learning to stand up, struggling and struggling to stand up, sometimes I do it. I go, oh, Krishna, help! And the danger seems to become less. My mind seems to be less mean to me. And the things around me look a little less dangerous. Or else I feel like I've got a little confidence now. I actually can try to turn to Krishna more. And this is how we grow. And this is our sadhana. This is the real sadhana. The 16 rounds can be done with bhakti, devotion, or they can be done mechanically. That's called niyamagraha. When you don't do it, you neglect your chanting. That's niyamagraha. You're neglecting the niyam. But if you do it in a mechanical way, and you think, good, I finished my 16 rounds, now let's get on with the day. When you catch yourself doing that, you should say, I'm still performing niyamagraha. And then you have an opportunity to go through this other cycle, which is so positive, once we understand it, and think, my gosh, I do this every day, I chant my rounds so badly. I've gone nowhere. I've been a devotee for so long. People even offer me respect. How embarrassing. And here I am, and I do this. Oh no. And then that panic comes again. What's going to happen to me? And again, I turn to Krishna at that moment and learn to do that. Learn to find out where your real fear is coming from and turn to Krishna then. If you become the master of doing that, that means that instead of running or drinking that poison so compulsively that I go unconscious within a second, if that one moment of thought comes in by hearing and hearing and hearing the Bhagavatam, by listening to the Bhagavatam, by listening to tapes, by reading, by whatever method that you have at your disposal, trying to understand, the sadhus say I am eternal. What does it mean? How can I uncover my eternal nature? By thinking and thinking like this, you will become very nice devotees, and the materialism that's surrounding you will become very distasteful. Just like if I brought you in here something really horrible to eat. I won't even mention, but you can just think of some of the horrible things that people eat in restaurants. Of course, I would never think of bringing something in here. But if I was to offer you something uneatable, it would be so disgusting to you. You would go, no, I don't want any of that. And you'd be angry even. You'd be offended. Why didn't you give me that? So that's how we have to feel towards the materialistic life outside. And when we see our mind wandering to something from our past that we used to like or do, we go, oh my gosh, Krishna, 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 I'm in danger from my mind. It's doing it, it's that thing again. Help, 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 help. And Krishna will allow you and strengthen you to draw it back. But devotees, please become conscious of this, that we're not there yet. We're only in the beginning of a long journey. And we have to do our part. We have to do our inner work. And that goes on all the time. 24 hours a day we have to try and do this. And if you think, oh, that sounds so hard, as I sometimes think, then I say to myself, because I like to push myself forward and say, just see what kind of a devotee you are. What is this? You say it's so hard. What else will you do? Well, I've got to get onto the computer and work out my this, and I have to go to work. Oh, you're not going to do it when you're at work? Work means that's your safety zone. You don't have to think about Krishna at work. Oh, but it's too hard. You know, a nice thought for us all is that in the verses of Bhagavad Gita commented upon by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who's one of our previous acharyas, he explains that when Krishna tells Arjuna to always think of him, that Arjuna thought of Krishna and yet he had to fight. So sometimes when he was fighting, he was not thinking of Krishna, he was thinking of his fighting. But he thought of Krishna in the morning and the evening. Now this is not really true. Arjuna was always thinking of Krishna. But he made this point, he said, if Krishna says always think about me and we can't do it, we should understand that we should think about Krishna in the morning and the evening. Because Krishna will not make a principle that we cannot follow. So he was bringing this principle, always think of me, to the level for the neophyte. Think in the morning, think in the evening. But Arjuna, of course, he was never out of sight of Krishna, so he was constantly thinking of him. So Kunti Devi here is giving us such wonderful inspiration. And also it's been my experience that, I've mentioned this in previous classes, that one time when I was visiting Hong Kong is a very materialistically modern city. There's one department store on the corner near a park on the main main road. And if you go into that shop, right on the corner, it's on a corner, and right in the front of that corner, you walk straight into an elevator, which takes you up 5 or 6 floors. And that elevator is completely made of glass. So when you walk in the elevator and you look out of the elevator, the cars are going by. And the cars are going by and they're car size, you know, big. And then you slowly, slowly go up this elevator. And it's worth going to Hong Kong just to do this. You go up the elevator, up, 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 up. And the cars get smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And one time I did this with my children, and then I said to them, okay, now how big are the cars? And they'd go like this with their finger, and they'd say, that's big. And then we'd come down the elevator again. Down, 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 down. And you go like this, that big, that big, that big, that big, that big, until you come down and they're full size again. And when we did that, I thought to myself, this is what the Bhagavatam does. It takes you up, 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 up so high that the petty little things that are like gnawing away at you and seem enormous, they suddenly just don't seem so important. They become that big. And then, when you walk out of the temple room, you go upstairs and take prasadam, and the magic disappears. And as soon as you've had enough prasadam and had a bit of a chat with your friends, there they are again, life size. So we can always avail ourselves of this. This is the nature of the Bhagavatam. It's not the nature of you as a great or intelligent person. So we can always avail ourselves of it again and go up again like that by the gift of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And if we do this regularly, you will see that you come to a point where Krishna consciousness becomes so attractive. It's so real, it's so attractive that the problems are there and they worry us, but immediately we have to go to Krishna because we know he will help me with this. And so then the problems lose their danger. Even though they're still there, we get afraid like children. They lose their, it's like snakes who don't have any venom. Still, we don't like them very much when they go like this, but we know, oh, I know what to do here. And we can actually allay our fears and go on with our life peacefully and safely under Krishna's shelter. Thank you very much. So does anyone have any questions? Yes.
How do you manage to be Krishna conscious?
In the day or in the morning and the night?
No, in the middle.
In the middle? Well, Krishna says in the middle of Bhagavad Gita, you know, there are six chapters in the middle of Bhagavad Gita. And if you have a look at those six chapters, you'll see that in every one of those six chapters, Krishna gives a little or a long list of things that he is. So once we were in Fiji, with Srila Prabhupada was there, and we were asked to go out on Harinam because the devotees who were living there were going out. So we went out on Harinam to a Fijian village, and the people to us looked like prehistoric. They were so like impossible to imagine them being Krishna conscious because they were so native. And so we did what we did. We did the normal thing we do. Magazines, nobody took them. Chanting, they all stood there and looked at us like that. They thought we were strange. We thought they were unusual. So we came home and nothing very exciting had happened to report. So we said to Srila Prabhupada, these people, they don't look like they're ready to accept Krishna consciousness yet. And then Srila Prabhupada said, oh no, you tell them, I am the light of the sun, I am the moon, you teach them like this. So he went to the tenth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, and he went through all the things that God is, because they were very, not to understand anything about Krishna. So maybe where our minds and our experience of Krishna consciousness is also still a little primitive. We're not really that immersed in remembrance of Krishna because we're just starting to become. So then we have to learn how to see him in other things as well. And we have to learn when we're doing things, we have to bring back these points. So therefore we have to become quite like, we can try to memorize these kind of lists of what Krishna says he is. And then we try to see like that. And the trying is also seeing Krishna, even though we don't succeed, maybe. In the same way that the baby who's trying to stand up is all contributing to his walking ability. It's part of his learning to walk. So we try and hear something, we try and think about it. Another idea is that you find a verse or something, you write it down, take it with you. On that particular day, you try to look at it again and again. These are mechanical ways. that we can do it, but really we have to want to do it. Otherwise we get into a very unpleasant state of mind where we think, there's the morning program and I've done that, and now what? And we just think the rest of the day is for me. It can happen wherever we are, whether we're even in the ashram, that can sometimes attack us. So therefore we have to look and watch other people too, see how they're doing it. Some people then may stop at some time and read a little bit. And some people who work in offices have things on their computer. Yeah. And they turn to those things that they have placed on their computer screen for a moment's break here and there. So there are many practical ways. That would be a really interesting thing to have a istagosti on, where people, all the devotees say how they think, how I remember Krishna during the day. They share their methods with each other. It would make you all more self-aware to see, what do I do? And then you can share it with others. So these are very nice subject matters to share amongst the devotees. Yeah. Anything else? Yes.
And then you say that next how come to do praise for difficulties, but because we are not so advanced, and if we pray, and then after a couple of days we find ourselves praying to remove those difficulties. So
yeah, yeah. No, we don't pray for difficulties, and Kunti Deva doesn't pray for difficulties. That's not our process. We don't go, oh Krishna, please give me some difficulties. We say, please help me to remember you, please help me to serve you. And when the difficulties come, we apply ourselves more. We don't pray for difficulties. It's not like we all have to be in difficulty. That's not our philosophy. Our philosophy is, try to remember Krishna. And unfortunately, or fortunately, difficulties do come. Right? Have we all seen that? The difficulties sort of come to us, even if we're trying our best to not make them or create them, they will come. So we don't want more of them. That's going too far. We want to remember Krishna when they come. Because yes, if I said, please Krishna, give me some difficulties so I can remember you, and the next minute something lands on my head and then I'm like, oh no, what is this? This is terrible, take it away. So then we would just be swinging around because we haven't got the point clear. The point that's clear is, you know, regardless of whatever situation, but Kunti was so advanced. You see, Śrīla Sanātana Gosvāmī tells us that for devotees, and this is devotees meaning we're aspiring devotees. Sometimes Śrīla Prabhupāda would say that, you are aspiring devotees. But for devotees, there's only two kinds of difficulties. There's the difficulties that Krishna puts them in so everyone can see how extraordinary they are, because they're totally fixed. No difficulties will disturb them in the least. It will only highlight how amazing they are. And then there's the difficulties that they're ready to face in order to actually experience Krishna, his presence, that he'll come. So you see, even with serious advanced devotees in our movement, they're ready to take on anything. Because they know, oh, Krishna will come more if I do that difficult task. But we shouldn't do that in a silly way. We should do that in a very thoughtful way, and only if we're under guidance to do that. Otherwise, we should do our steady work and try to become steady. Nishtha, this is what we need. We need steadiness. We don't need great ambition and so forth. We need to become steady in our Krishna consciousness. Just to make that clear, I'm not an advocate of taking on difficulties. But they do seem to be able to visit us regularly. So when they visit, when I feel, oh, I'm in a difficult situation right now, then what do? This is what we have to learn. Oh, I'm in a difficult situation. Well, this is really, could be fortunate for me if I handle this right. I could actually turn to Krishna now more and say, oh Krishna, please help me with this this situation, to remember you. Not, please help me to get rid of this situation, but please help me to remember you. Thank you so much for giving me an opportunity to remember you. But please also understand that Krishna isn't the one who puts us in difficulties. Because sometimes I hear devotees and they say, oh, Krishna wanted this, so he put me into this. But Krishna's up there. He's enjoying with the cowherd boys. He doesn't do that. When you come to the material world, the material energy takes care of you. Goes, ha, takes care of everything. And Krishna is very merciful. He would happily take us out of all our difficulties in one moment. But that's not what we want. You think about it. You watch yourself. Observe yourself. And you'll see that actually that's not what I want. I want him to remove the difficulty. I don't want him to take me out of it. There's so many things I like down here. He mustn't take it away. No. Just remove a few of the difficulties. You see, but this is something that I've found very helpful for me, is that I've understood that Krishna is so merciful. He doesn't do any difficulty making for the devotees. He's interested in releasing them from all their difficulties, and he will do it in a moment. But the material energy is meticulous. Meticulous. Everything that you do is recorded, you could say. Just like a machine. It works like a machine. That's the nature of the material energy. And that's why we say that the material world is a miserable place. Because whatever you do here, it's all recorded. Every little bit of it is there. So sometimes you feel scared. What was I doing in my last 100 births? My goodness. So it's not Krishna who's giving us difficulties, unless we're such elevated devotees and he wants to glorify us. It's ourselves who have created the difficulties. And the material energy is just showing you how the material world works. And Krishna is ready to give you a long stay here if you want, only because he wants you to come back. Not because he wants you to suffer. He wants you to come thoroughly to say, there's nothing here that works for me. There's like nothing here that works for me. I want to leave now. And then even, we don't say, I want to leave now, please give me my ticket out. We don't say that. We say, if you want me to stay here, I'm willing to stay here. But there's nothing here that I want anymore. I just want to serve you. And then when you come to that platform, then you advance. And until then, we all have to do our work to get to that platform. And we should encourage each other with our whatever we've learnt. That's how devotees associate. Yes.
Though we may not have come to the Naam Avash platform, we may be still chanting Naam Avash. Still so many sins are getting washed away. And then when a person takes shelter or initiation of a bona fide spiritual master in a specific situation, then it is usually said that the spiritual master takes away whatever the rest of the sins that is there. So then when suffering comes after that, and we know that suffering comes as a result of sins, and
yes,
then one starts thinking that Krishna is now personally interfering, giving those sufferings. How do we then reconcile that with...
Okay, yeah, this is an important point. So, well, I've taken initiation that Krishna is supposed to take it all away. So isn't it now Krishna? So an example that can be given is, say, if I murdered somebody and the court, and I'm supposed to be hung, and the king intervenes and he says, don't hang him, give him instead not a free pardon, because he'll go and murder another person, but give him a life imprisonment. So the life imprisonment is given by the king, right? It's his dispensation of mercy. He's not going to give that person freedom, because that person will murder again. He hasn't learned his lesson. But the king has intervened. So Krishna, he takes away our sinful reactions, but because we're not yet on the platform of pure devotional service, he gives us a token
which represents the kind of suffering that somebody who was doing that activity should have to learn their lesson. So it's Krishna in that sense, but it's not that Krishna said, okay, now I'll give you this amount of suffering. It's that he, if we have nothing, right, if we have no good, bad karma, it's all gone, we'll become nothing. Because we're not yet eligible to go there, we have to stay here, we're still in prison, but he's altered our sentence. And he's altered it in favor of something very light when it would have been very severe. But he didn't choose to give us that suffering, he altered our long-term reaction to something else. Do you understand? And that what he alters it to is also beneficial for somebody with that criminal mentality. It's not just a random, like, okay, give him this, that. Krishna is so perfect. So it's Krishna in a way, but it's coming from our mountainous sinful reactions that we're, he's reduced to something. So it's still, it's yes, it's under Krishna, but Krishna didn't give us that suffering. Do you see? It's like you say he did, but he didn't, because he didn't say, okay, I'd love to see Prabhuji suffering. He doesn't do that. He's all merciful. He doesn't do that. He passes that over to his energies. So when we're eligible, when we've learnt from our experience of life, as we're saying, that there's no happiness here, I cannot be happy. So Srila Prabhupada comes, and he speaks so strongly, and if we listen to him, carefully listen to him, it will gradually bend us, so we begin to see his way. And as we see his way, we see that actually, I can't be happy here, so let me just try and use this life as nicely as I can in Krishna's service. As Srila Prabhupada said to me, give one life. What's the difficulty? Just give this one life to Krishna. So that's a change of heart. It's not a change of duty. You don't say, okay, I'm giving my life to Krishna, so I renounce my family. But now you have the challenge to change my mentality in my particular setting, which wasn't given to me by Krishna. It was given to me as my accumulated desires over so many lives. Now I want to make that change. It's very difficult. Well, that's good, because now Krishna will be there for you. Turn to him, turn to him. This is what the devotees are saying. He's very kind. He'll help you make that change. And that change will make all, everything become not so bad. It may take time. You may have to suffer some. Don't blame it on Krishna. Then you'll be angry with him unnecessarily. Say, he's so mean. He didn't give me a this and he didn't give me a that. And then you'll misunderstand your whole situation. Turn to him. Any more questions? Yes, Mataji.
Mataji, you were mentioning about you made us to be exercising the sensitive situation. So you were answering Prabhuji's question. So, in those big difficulties, we have to learn to take shelter of Krishna. But
yes.
It is during those small difficulties of life, like, you know, all the everyday little differences that we have, conflict of interests that we have in our dealings with other devotees. Or
It's in the little things that it's harder.
Then we tend to take shelter of our false ego, you know, some of our conditioning nature that we have over so many lifetimes of that. In those little dealings, it's very... Sometimes, you know, Krishna takes a backseat and, you know, just going on a mental speculation.
That's true. And the other thing that's really hard is if somebody says you have to do it all the time, then it feels like that's impossible, I can't do it, so don't even try, because it's just, I obviously can't hope to get anywhere with this because I'm so whatever I am and feel a little frightened. There's two things there. One is that moment by moment, who has the power at this point to control and remember Krishna moment by moment? That's very difficult. That's very natural. You know, like for a mother, if you have a child, there's a tendency you do forget, of course, you have to do things, but very quickly it comes back into your mind, right? If you think, oh, where's my son? I haven't seen him for a little while. I don't know, where is he? Because there's a bond there.
So that's how we should be with Krishna. Yes, maybe we do drift into this, and sometimes we feel, oh, this is too hard, I have to all the time be thinking about Krishna, this is just a torture, this is awful, you know. But when my mind tells me that, because it tells me that quite often, then I turn around to it and I say, okay, when you're driving the car, don't you have to keep your eye on the road all the time? Don't you? If you say, gosh, it's boring keeping my eye on the road, let me just have a look at the scenery and drive, what will happen? So there are instances in life where you have to keep your mind on it all the time. Of course we say, yes, but that's only for 1 hour, I'm driving somewhere and then I get out of the car. So then we say, okay, then do it as long as you can. Then maybe you forget Krishna for a while. But as soon as you're able, try it again. And then I think of the example of the child learning to walk. They may try a little bit, then they fall over. And the mother doesn't come with a whip and say, what are you doing? You know, get up, get up. You know, the mother knows it takes time to remember Krishna all the time. But she's happy when she sees the child trying to walk. So we have to become a little like that with ourselves, not angry with ourselves when we can't do it, but happy with ourselves when we see ourselves doing it. Otherwise, it's too hard, you know, it's too tension forming. So I go between the two. On one side, I tell myself in my own practice, you have to do it. When I see I'm not willing to do it, I say, you have to do it. And as soon as I see I'm thinking that this is all too hard or too much, I say, it's all right, you don't have to do it, just relax. And then as soon as I'm a little relaxed, I say, you have to do it. You have to become a manager of yourself. And if you become a manager of yourself, then you can tell other people how to manage themselves. Because the principles are the same. You have to have a sign where you tell yourself, it's all right, don't worry, every Krishna understands. And then you have to have a sign where you tell them, what will Krishna think of you if you do that? But we shouldn't be too hard or too harsh, or else it'll be more difficult to advance. And you see, advanced devotees are like that. And Srila Prabhupada was like that. On one hand, he'd say something so stern. I remember when he'd come here and sit there, I didn't like his lectures very much. Because during his lectures, he was like, he was representing the Bhagavatam. He was representing the absolute truth. He didn't smile at people. He didn't make even eye contact. You look at the videos, he closed his eyes. It was like so incompatible with modern day teaching how to make a presentation. To smile at the people, make eye contact with the people. You know what we call that, a facilitator. He was not a facilitator in the slightest. He closed his eyes and he talked and he talked and he talked, and when he had a certain important point, he opened his eyes like that. And it would send a little shiver down the spine. Because you just looked and thought, my gosh, I can't do anything that he's saying. This is too much. And then I remember every time in class, because I was very young, I was in my 20s when he was here, and at the end of the class I was depressed. I don't think this is Krishna consciousness. And sometimes I didn't think, I'm going to go home and live with my mother. This is too much. And then you'd sort of go outside, you'd be all not looking up because you didn't want to look at him because you might cry or something. Because it was overwhelming what he'd said, and seemed to have pointed out so many faulty things in you, and he didn't lower his standard ever. It was this, and so you had this, oh no. And then he'd come out and he'd be walking across here to his room and he would see you and he'd go, oh, and a smile would come. And then he would personalize his dealings. But with the Bhagavatam, it had to be absolute. Because the absolute is our standard. We're representing Krishna. Krishna is speaking here. So he had to speak as Krishna's representative. Then in dealings with the different devotees, they would say, I have this problem, that problem. And it wasn't that he became casual, but he would personalize his advice to them accordingly. So naturally you were sort of like hoping that somehow or another he would look at you, or somehow you'd get a chance to talk to him. But then when you did, it was like, you didn't know what to say. Because he was so awe-inspiring for a young devotee. But I learned as I grew and advanced in Krishna consciousness that there was always the two. There was the standard. You must keep that standard in mind. But then when you start to apply it, you have to be a little kindly and a little bit lenient, but not so much that you forget about the standard. So this is true for us also, because here Srila Prabhupada speaking to us. Any more questions? Yes, Prabhupada.
You mentioned the middle chapters of Bhagavad Gita where Lord Krishna explains that all these things of me,
Yes.
Now, in this situation, this chapter of Bhagavad Gita mentioned about the distress, the dangers.
Yes.
So the happiness, distress, they are the part of the life.
Yes.
Now, can we understand that from the happiness and this, they are the most of the time when we forget Krishna. One is too happy or too distressed. Is it right to understand from this point that it's better to be more in a difficult situation than in a happy situation? Because we try to remember Krishna more than in happy, somebody has to remind or wants to finish our happiness, we try to remember Krishna.
For those of us who remembered an unhappy situation or a difficulty that was within their Krishna consciousness, they might have noticed that at some point in that difficulty they urgently turned to Krishna for help. And he was very real and very powerfully there. Did anyone have that experience? Anyone? Yes. So that's the value of our Krishna consciousness plus difficulty. But sometimes difficulties will come and we don't remember Krishna at all. So we can't really say as a fixed statement, that difficulty is better than happiness for a neophyte devotee. But having said that, I've actually heard Srila Prabhupada say that for a neophyte devotee, difficulty is better. Because of that tendency, when they get happy, they forget Krishna. That's what you're pointing out. So that doesn't mean that Krishna is going to work out a way to just torture us. But it means that if we have difficulty, we'll make probably a little more advancement if we remember Krishna. And we'll find it a little harder when we get a nice situation to remember Krishna. We'll feel a little comfortable, we'll feel a little pleased with ourselves, and we'll feel a little bit like we're quite clever because we sorted all that out. And so then that will become not as favorable a situation as that moment where we felt vulnerable. So vulnerability, although no one likes to feel vulnerable, can prove to be beneficial if we turn to Krishna. Very nice points. It's so nice when devotees can go backwards and forwards amongst themselves in this way and share different aspects of things, because many times we misunderstand a point. You know, we think it's not so important, or we think it's scary to us, or something. And when you talk with other devotees, then it puts it into perspective, and we can then apply that. I was also going to say that there's a wonderful lecture. I think it was in 1974, and those who have folio at home should look it up. It was in Bombay. And Srila Prabhupada was lecturing, I think, in chapter 7, I think it's verse 14, I'm not quite sure. It's the verse where Krishna says, I am the light and the sun and the moon, the taste of water. And it's quite an amazing lecture. It's really profound. If you think of Srila Prabhupada, his voice speaking it. In fact, it's so nice that it would make a very nice presentation. You could make it into a slideshow. Because Srila Prabhupada is talking about these points, how to see Krishna. And he goes so far as to say, in Bombay, of all places, he said the sounds, and he's not talking about the omkar, he's talking about any sound is Krishna. And Bombay, toot, 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 and he's saying, that's Krishna. And when I first read it, you know, I found it on the folio when I was looking up something, it struck me so deeply that sometimes I remember it. This is our misfortune. Sometimes I remember that. And talking about the sun and the moon and water. And don't we drink water? Every day we drink water. These are the ways we can learn to see Krishna in difficulty or not in difficulty. So practice when we're not in difficulty, and then the difficulty will be like a... You know, when you're in the ocean and there's waves, when the wave comes, if you don't want to be knocked over by the wave, you just lift yourself slightly off the ground, and the wave will lift you even slightly more off the ground, and it will come through, and it will put you back again. So we want the difficulties to be like that, not that they just turn us all over when we drown. Right. If there are no more questions, we'll finish here and take prasadam. So try to remember some of these points while you're taking prasadam, and even more difficult, after you take a prasadam. And today will be a great success for you. Hare Krishna.